This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land Radio Network. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. And now, your host, Jonathan Richler.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you very much for tuning in. It's the 20th of June, 2017. Hello, heat wave. It's very, very nice. You know what? The wind was kind of great. It was a really challenging day. I was going to say something else. Challenging day to put clothes out on the line, which I was trying to do because, you know, power bills. And the whipping of the wind was unforgiving, I have to say. Made me reassess my move back home in 2010. But you know what? I put one of my fingers in the air to the wind. I'm not telling you which one. And I said, I'm happy to be here. Does it? Because yes, my clothes were wind dried a little too fast and a little too violently for my liking, but they weren't filled with the pollutants of Toronto or Montreal. They were filled with the sawdust of renovations and the smoke particles of other people's barbecues, and it was just fantastic. That's the way I want it. That's the way I want my summer. Yes. 40% support is the amount of support we are seeing right now for the hydroelectric project development known as Muskrat Falls. This is down 5% since November and 14% since last year at this time. I am uncomfortable with the amount of people surveyed for this particular question and answer. It was only 401 residents of Newfoundland and Labrador. It's been a long time since I did statistics, grade 8 to be precise. And I've done some polling before in my time in government and a nonprofit, but generally our sample size was 1,000 for a population as big as Newfoundland and Labrador. Don't know why only 401 residents were interviewed by Don Mills's company, but there you go. That's it. And obviously, this company's in the business of providing accurate data, so perhaps I am out of the loop. But there you go. Only 40% say it's a great idea. And 49% are against it. So where are the other 9%? I don't know. Asleep. What do you think? Corporate Research Associates has provided this information. What do you think, boys? What do you think, gals? Is it going to make a difference? Is the dancing video that the land protectors did outside of the Aboriginal Labrador Affairs Office of the government in Labrador going to make a bloody difference with respect to the day-to-day operations of Nalcor? Possibly. You want to talk about that tonight? I certainly do. I think that the folks who are within the membership of the Land Protectors are coming up with some very innovative means of protest, whether it's guerrilla Facebook Live interviews or dance moves in front of an office or getting people to report essentially live from the site. I think it's all fantastic. This is what it is to live in a free and open society. Will it make a difference? That is ultimately what the question is. I don't know. I don't know the answer. I really don't. But I admire the stick-to-itiveness. I admire the passion. I admire all aspects of those who are protesting against this $14 billion mega project. I believe it is twice over budget. I believe it is embarrassing. I don't understand how those who sign the agreements can walk down the street with their heads at level. I don't know. Maybe we're misunderstanding. Maybe there are such things as cost overruns, and fair game. Maybe that's it, because we all know that projects go over budget. That's okay. There were some mistakes made along the way. Astaldi, unfortunately, as we know from many observations, was apparently the wrong choice with respect to having no experience working in cold climate conditions, they being a company from Italy. As to whether or not this affects the overall potential, the long-term growth, the potential of having a hydroelectric project that we can call our own to generate money for the province of Newfoundland and Labrador in perpetuity, I believe in that project. I truly do. I believe in the idea that we can be a self-sustaining province, and eventually, who knows, the way the world's going to go, perhaps a city-state down the road. I don't know, boss. Maybe I'm watching too many sci-fi programs, but there it is. This is a good idea in terms of energy management. Wind power, also a good idea. Fracking, probably not, but who knows? There's lots of research out there for all of these ideas. You want to talk about it? This is your show, not mine. This is the marketplace of ideas. I'm just saying, is it a bad idea that this project is twice the amount of money that we were told we would have to spend? More than twice, actually. I think it was $5 billion at the beginning. I'm laughing because I have to shake my head. Otherwise, I could do both. $14 billion. Where are we? Where are the premiers who signed these deals? Where is Danny Williams' opinion on this? I believe the last time he was interviewed on this, he said that he still believes in the project. Great. Where is Kathy Dunderdale in terms of the maintenance and the maintaining of the messaging to continue the new energy campaign? Don't forget, she won a campaign on this. She won an election on this. In effect, I believe her government called this a referendum on the project itself. There is value here. There are a number of individuals who benefited from working on this project in the province of Newfoundland and Labrador with respect to paying their mortgages, with respect to staying here and investing. It's not all bad news, folks. But when you put that against what the Labrador land protectors have to say, that they are being forgotten, not only misrepresented, but forgotten or cast aside in the sense that Nalcor has said, listen, if there's methyl mercury issues, we'll compensate you. We'll find a way to feed you down the line. That's what folks such as Jim Learning and Denise Cole have said on the airwaves. I don't know one way or the other because we're still waiting for the studies. And if you look into it, methyl mercury contamination or the potential of can take decades to find any sort of rational data that we can assess or ascertain. Don't know. There's the question of the North Spur along the way as well. There are several questions, but when you take upon an idea and a risky project, which becomes a mega project, such as providing your province and other areas with hydroelectric energy, there are risks to be assessed. Was it the right number of risks versus the right number of gains? We're still waiting for those answers. I would just like to spark the interest in all of you folks tonight and throughout the summer. Let's talk about this because, like it or not, this is our legacy. It is a legacy project. It's yours. It's mine. It's everyone else's. Do we put this blame easily upon one or two people, or do we look for solutions? I would like to look for the latter, which is let's find some solutions. Let's look for the positive. Let's try and figure out where we're going to go from here. I'm into it. Are you into it? You can yell at me all you want at VOCM Nightline. That's our Twitter account. You can send us some emails. I know a few of you will. Nightline@VOCM.com. I'm all about it. I'm looking for answers as well as you are. So let's do it. The sun is down. It's time for you to pour a cup of Red Rose or something stronger and talk to me about this. Pastor of Muppets on Twitter is wondering what's going on with the imported bees. He or she says there's a lot of talk about imported bees lately, and they also hope there are inspections in Port-au-Basque with respect to bats. Why bats? Because Pastor of Muppets brings up an interesting point that we discussed months ago here, which is white nose syndrome. There's this disease going around. It ain't just the bees that are in trouble, ladies and gentlemen. It's the bug-eating critters known as bats that are also having a bad news situation with respect to their health, and it is an infection or a virus called the white nose syndrome, which is knocking out a bunch of bats. So, how do you keep your population clean and healthy? Don't import certain objects or crops that harbor sleeping bats. And in this aspect, according to the Pastor of Muppets, it's lumber which we're importing from New Brunswick and Nova Scotia. Tragic that we're importing lumber, but there it is. And Pastor says that both of these have been affected by the white nose syndrome. And all it takes is one bat So, are they overlooked? Are they being checked? This is an interesting question. I'll have to put that to the Minister of, I don't know what part of the Environment Department I'm going to look for, because it has been trifurcated, if that's a word. I know bifurcated is, but you know where I'm going. Split! There you go. Juilliard wants us to talk about the Department of Health is looking for participants with respect to the Mental Health and Addictions report, which came out in March, called Towards Recovery. They're looking for, apparently, according to her, a variety of people who work and live with, and I don't know, this is confusing, people who work within the support system for mental health and addictions issues. It's hard to interpret what happens on Twitter, but there you go. Now, I want to tell you a story today. This is your friendly giant moment, folks. This is where you come through the drawbridge, make yourself cozy by the fire. Let me just put the rocking chair a little closer there. Oh, there you go. Jerome's going to come out with his lyre, and Rusty is going to play the pipes. Here we go. Today I put out the garbage at my house, and I like the net, but I don't love the net. So what I use are big garbage cans, right? They're on wheels, they're plastic, they're made by Rubbermaid. I'm not getting paid to say that name, but that's what they are. You all know what they are. They got snap lids, they're big, they hold about 3-4 garbage bags, right? For a regular household. This one had three. Two. It had two bags. Lots of room at the top, because there were only two bags. I live next to a couple of high schools. I put my garbage out at 7:30 in the morning. Garbage is normally collected around 10. So, did that, went inside, started my work day, let the dog hang out outside, you know, to catch some sun, because it was beautiful. He's old, he's got the arthritis, he loves the sun. Went about my business, came out an hour later, and checked the garbage. Of course, it hadn't been picked up yet, as per usual, but whatever. I like to put it out there. Not the night before, but the morning of, because it gets me out of bed early. And I noticed that the lid, the snap lid, was off. And it was a windy day, boys, so I went out to re-secure it. And I opened up the friggin' lid, and somebody, some good citizen, had put in a yogurt cup and a plastic spoon. Or perhaps it was a fruit cup. I don't know. It had some white traces of, I'm guessing, dairy products within. Someone had just placed that in my garbage can, didn't secure the lid, and went on their merry flippity-flop way. I have never had blood pressure rise that quickly at 8:30 in the morning. In my life, in my 45 years, I thought to myself, that's an audio file for a lot of curse words. And then I went on to secure the lid, and I left the plastic cup, ladies and gentlemen, inside the garbage can because I wanted to see what would happen. I wanted to see where that would end up, because we're all concerned about where plastic goes, right? Yeah, so I'll tell you. 2 hours later, I went out when the garbage man was coming along, sanitary engineer. And first of all, I have to say, Buddy looked at me and I looked at Buddy and I said, hello. And he looked at me and he said, are you that Nightline fella? And that was just one of those moments of total fun and bliss, because, you know, it's fun to be recognized sometimes, only sometimes, but it was also great to be recognized by one of our city's employees who does a great service. And I said, yes, I am. And I asked this person's name. I won't tell you who it was or is. And I shook their hand. He took his glove off. And because that's what you do, right? These are the people in your neighborhood. That was what I was to him, and that's what he was to me. And he took that garbage. He had already taken it by the time I got out there. So the plastic friggin' spoon was at the bottom of my garbage can. And that yogurt cup was two houses down. So I went and I retrieved it. And I put it in the garbage for next week. But whoever that was, take responsibility for your own crap, okay? And last week, I want to tell you another story. Only because 4 weeks ago on Mother's Day, or 5 weeks ago, whenever it was, myself and a bunch of individuals took it upon ourselves to clean up the high school area and the Sobeys, which is around our area. Took us 3 hours or 2 hours, whatever it was. We picked up about 40 odd bags of garbage. That's all it took. There was about 8 of us. And that's great. There's a lot of community garbage pickups. And ever since then, of course, you're conscious. You're looking on the ground to the areas that you picked up the crap, other people's crap, OPC. And you're looking to see if it's still clean. And if it isn't, frankly, I don't know about anybody else, but I still pick up other people's crap in the area that I've already picked up. Because that's what you do. You become conscious. And thank you, Walter Harding, for inspiring me. So last week, I was going down the valley with my dog, Zeke, who's a senior citizen at 12, and we walked very, very slowly. And there were these two young girls, probably grade 10, maybe grade 9. I don't know. There's a couple of high schools. There's one junior high in my neighborhood. They were walking up that road past Empire. I was walking down. One of them drops their wax paper cover of their bagel sandwich. You know where it was from. I don't have to tell you. So I'm humming and hawing as to what I'm going to do about this. And I go over and I pick it up. This wax paper square, 7x7, whatever it is. Because it ain't biodegradable. And it's blowing in the wind. So I go and get it. And then I turn around and I'm thinking, do I tell that young girl? And then I see her friend, who's also eating a snack from that restaurant. She balls up the paper bag from her donut or whatever it was and throws it on the ground right in front of me. So I stop and I say, hey. And they both turn around. And I said, pick that up. And I know I might have gotten in trouble. Because I'm talking to people who aren't my children. Maybe someone will call me a bully. But I'm holding that flipping piece of wax paper in my left hand. And I say, you, this is yours, right? And that young girl says, I don't know. And I said, I know you dropped it. I saw you. I'm standing right here. And you threw that on the ground. And I said, this is my neighborhood. I live here. Take that. Pick that up. And go find a garbage can at your school, because I know you're going back there. And that was it. I handed her the wax paper. The other young girl picked up the ball of paper that she had left there. I went on my way. My dog took a poop. I picked that up, and I put that in the garbage can when I got home. And that's what you do in your neighborhood. You pick stuff up, and you don't throw things on the ground. And I thought that was a great, productive session, because the three of us walked away. Four of us, if you include the dog, who had a great poop. The four of us walked away feeling that there was a productive relationship, I think. I walked down into the valley and had a little walk around with my dog. I don't know if those two girls put those things in the garbage, but I can tell you, I walked up the same way. I didn't see them on the ground. So I have faith, but that's what it takes. That's, I guess, the new neighborhood watch. Just tell people, like I used to in the 1970s when I grew up, when I saw the TV commercials that told you to give a hoot and don't pollute. And point the finger at people and call them litter bugs. I'm all about bringing that back. That's it. You want to talk about trash tonight? I'm all about it. Producer Dave Williams and I are getting dirty. We'll be right back after this.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the program. We're going to go speak with the president of the Food Fishers Allied Workers Union on line two in just a moment. But I have to read an email from AJ who sends a few bon mots once or twice a month. And here it is. My apologies to those who live beyond the overpass. Ready for this? Pour yourself a cup of tea, you know? Danny and Johnny hiding up in a tree, sooking that Andy was so mean to me. Wah! The two of those wimps, says AJ, put together wouldn't even make half the woman Channy Duff was. What a wimpy bunch of whooshes is council. Go running to mommy because that bully Andy wants to know what they were up to. Wow. I love emails like this keep them coming. Unbelievable, says AJ. We want mature, grown-up men and women involved in our politics, not a bunch of childish sooks. Breen, Galgay, and the rest, grow up. Boot them all out next election. You're welcome. Have a good evening. Now, thank you for a wonderful email, and I hope that encourages a lot of you folks to call, because while I do appreciate and respect Councillor Breen and have the same goes to Councillor Galgay and former Mayor Andy Wells, I gotta say, lots of respect for all three of these individuals. This bullying issue, when you're a public figure, you undergo a lot of scrutiny and sometimes abuse. I don't know where the lines are drawn with respect to quote-unquote bullying. What it seems to me, and I say this all the time in this program, that we overuse that word to a great degree. And I think that we need to explore in 2017 where we are going to take that, because not everything is bullying. Sometimes you're just being a jerk. Sometimes you're just being a juice arse. Other times you're actually bullying someone and it can have an actual impact on their lives. I need to find out where the differentiation lies. I need to find out what the actual implications are, and I think you do too. Are Councillors Breen and Galgay losing sleep over emails from former Mayor Andy Wells? Or are they just calling him a bully? I don't know. I put the question to you. I've had conversations with Councillor Breen, who is running for the position of mayor in the upcoming election in September. Haven't spoken to Galgay about this, but probably will in the near future. What it actually entails and how this actually affects their lives. To say off the cuff that so-and-so is being a bully versus it really having an impact on your lives, I don't know. I know that I get a lot of abusive emails. I get a lot of people that point their finger at me in my face ever since I was in grade 6 or grade 7. You get used to it, you move on, you find other ways to make friends and enemies. You deal with it. Not everybody can, and sometimes it affects me greatly. It truly does. Do I deal with it in different ways than other people do? Probably, but we all deal with things in different ways. But we have to have a universal, I think, definition or set of criterion with respect to what is bullying. I think it's important, because that way we don't abuse the word. That's it. That's all I have to say on that. And I've gotten into some hot water right here on this program of VOCM Nightline, and sometimes when I'm guest hoping open line, and you know the show I'm talking about. That's it. What does bullying mean? Is it overused? Is it exploited term? I think it is. I think we need to take it back and figure out what it means to all of us. There you go. I'm done. We're going to go to line number two. We're speaking with the president of the Food Fishers Allied Workers Union, affiliated with the Uniform, Mr. President Keith Sullivan. How are you, sir?
Doing good, Jonathan. How are things on your end?
I'm good. I'm a little confused, though. I got a flurry of press releases, all dated June 16th, June 19th, June 20th, from Fish NL, which I think is now called Sea Wave Fish NL. I believe they've changed their name recently, but they're still known as Fish NL. And they're saying that the FFAW has been convicted in court of deceiving its membership. Keith Sullivan, are you in jail right now?
No, not in jail. No one was convicted at all of anything. I'll just say on that this was something was talked about in the past, and actually was a great victory overall for fishermen. The FFAW were able to secure some compensation for scallop harvesters who fish in the Strait of Belle Isle. Mm-hmm. So that's where the cable was going across. Harvesters weren't going to be able to fish there. We've had cables really, all over the world and in other areas, and fishermen never got the same consideration as they did here. So it was certainly an excellent precedent. We have a lot of industrial activity out on the Grand Banks now, and fishermen. Fish harvesters have their grounds, taken up, the risk of pollution, all kinds of risks, and not very much consideration given to them at all. We celebrate all this work with seismic and other things, and well, I'm not saying we do. It is often touted about a great year for seismic, but there's not enough consideration given to the fact that this could actually affect the environment and obviously fishermen as well.
I think that part of this, and correct me if I'm wrong, is with respect to the lump sum payouts from Nalcor, which were to be distributed for scallop fishermen from or in the region of the Strait of Belle Isle as a result of the fact that you can't scrape the ground anymore where the undersea cable was to be laid. And this was in 2014 where Nalcor agreed to pay $2.5 million to compensate fish harvesters there. There was some controversy with respect to current fish harvesters versus people who are holding on to licenses that they haven't used for a number of years, where the distribution of that money would go. Also, the administration fee of $388,000 or $390,000, I don't know what it was, for disbursing the $2.6 million over 30 years. Where is the money? What does the $300,000 go to? And I frankly, if you put that over 30 years, it's a no-brainer. $10,000 a year to administer funds is pretty simple. But I guess what most fish harvesters are wondering is, why is this not paid out in a lump sum? And if it is administered over 30 years, who gets the interest?
Okay.
Lots of questions.
So the starting discussion on this was to have Nalcor compensate anyone who was really going to be impacted. And the closure wasn't really to happen until the future. So people are going to be impacted by this for... it'll be next year and in 30 years' time. So a harvester that's going fishing in 25 years' time from now will be impacted. And, consideration was given for 30 years. And, this was certainly discussed with harvesters. But there was a number of other harvesters who came back certainly afterwards and looked believed that there was a lump sum payment was the best way to do it. Mm-hmm. And through it all, the courts... decided that the lump sum is appropriate, and this money is going to be paid out as quickly as we possibly can do it to the harvesters. So this is going to be wrapped up, and like I said, either way, I mean, I think the biggest moral of this entire story is that there's an industrial development, and the FFAW certainly worked hard for fishermen and did get some consideration. So I think that's the biggest take home from that. So. This will be resolved all very quickly.
So it'll be resolved very quickly, but let's look at the amount of money that apparently is slotted to administer the disbursement of the $2.6 million. Can you rationalize that amount of money over 30 years, please?
Well, if it had been over 30 years, which is not going to be now, it's just going to be paid out in a lump sum.
Fair enough.
The plan was to to be able to have it available for up to 30 years and into the future, but that's not going to be the case now. And overall, we put a lot of work and time, effort, and money into this, so there's not really anything an extra there for the organization certainly now. So the harvesters who were active harvesters at the time will get the benefits of this.
Okay. To me, I guess I looked at this when it happened in 2014 as, in effect, the union was trying to create somewhat of a sidebar of a pension plan. In other words, if you can't fish in Area X because Nalcor is doing whatever, they're giving you money, and it's up to the union and the owners of the licenses to figure out how to dispense or manage that particular amount of funds. Whether or not the fishers have a controlling interest in how those funds are dispersed, I think is a vitally important aspect. But to me, this is just another quote-unquote pension fund, right? The Food Fishers Allied Workers Union had an amount of money, which was compensation for a loss of potential revenue. And of course, the revenue itself had to be proven that it would be lost. Therefore, indicating that actual scallop fishermen in this case or fisher persons would demonstrate a loss and therefore be or have access to the money. But in the meantime, I suppose the big rub here is that the union itself should pay it out. But you're telling me now that that's what is going to happen.
Yeah, that's exactly the decision, is that it's paid out in lump sum and there won't be anything available next year or the year after or anything like that. So it's just paid out, straight up evenly to harvesters who had licenses at the time.
Okay. And if the Supreme Court did not make this ruling, would you have dispensed this out in lump sums, or would this have been held on to for prolonged disbursement?
Well, you know, we're happy to get the guidance from the court on this. So, you know, basically whatever the courts decide, obviously we were, you know, going to proceed that way. So, I mean, like I said, it's conclusive, and I think it's got to focus on the real good parts of this here, and I think it's something to look at for future developments. And, you know, there's harvesters are getting affected in many ways and sometimes not really given consideration, particularly when we're talking about you know, large oil developments and things like that. I think most people understand how important it is to our province, but renewable resource like fish certainly should get consideration as well. I mean, because those people are obviously impacted and it can have potential impacts on markets as well.
Very good. Final comments before we go to our break, and I'm going to quote from the June 20th release from Fish NL. But Friday's unprecedented ruling by the Court of Appeal backing up an earlier Supreme Court of Newfoundland Labrador decision means that the FFAW broke its sacred trust with its membership. Your comments, President Keith Sullivan.
Well, I mean, every single day we're working with harvesters and our other members, you know, building trust, getting that consensus is not always easy. So we're out, met with those harvesters about how to proceed before things happen, same as we always do, whether it's on issues around around quota. We have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of elected members on committees and serve their time as volunteers and try to, you know, shape the policy and direction. And, you know, you talked about, you know, municipal leaders, people in these positions understand how difficult that is. But, you know, quite proud of the members that we have who do that. And actually the focus, the planned focus of the call today was to talk about myself and a couple of elected leaders for local plants. Trudy Byrne from St. Anthony Seafoods and Barry Randall from the OCI plant in Bonavista, along with Minister Crocker and his deputy minister. We went to Ottawa just yesterday and had some meetings. And the main focus was certainly to ensure that workers who were affected by the extreme Arctic ice conditions also get income support, you know. So give credit to the federal government for recognizing that harvesters couldn't get to fish. You know, many were in positions where they're not able to pay for groceries or pay the bills. But there's also people in other jobs in the exact same position, and that should be recognized as well. So we did have meetings with the Newfoundland and Labrador caucus. You know, certainly some good conversations.
Okay.
Talk about some possible avenues and options. So certainly not giving up on this. Then we had a follow-up meeting after with the minister and the department. We talked about this before. It was Families, Children and Social Development, Jean-Yves Duclos. And we discussed, you know, what some of the options might be. And I was certainly disappointed that there was, you know, no immediate action. You know, we didn't walk out of there with something that was going to satisfy those workers that Trudy and Barry had to face every day, who haven't had meaningful work because of the ice. But they did say that they were, you know, willing to look at a solution. I'd say they had to do it now. And also, we had a provincial minister, Minister Crocker, said that they're willing to be a part of the solution. So there were some positives, not positive enough for my liking, or anybody else's. So I think you certainly need to come at decisively, act quickly, and find some help for people who are in that very, very desperate situation.
Appreciate your words tonight, President Sullivan, and we'll speak again, no doubt, in the very near future. Until then, I wish you an excellent week.
Yep, thank you very much, Jonathan.
Thanks.
Good night now.
Thank you for delivering this information to us. Good night, sir. Bye-bye. All right, we're going to go to the break. Afterwards, Don is in the queue, wants to talk about medical services available for disabled youth. Stay where you're tuned.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the show. Juilliard says conversations about mental health is a great start, but it is time for action and change. The people in Newfoundland and Labrador deserve it. It is my children and your friends deserve it. She included Steve Kent on this. I don't know why. Be that as it may, I replied to this person, and I say it many times on the show, and here it is. If you listen to my show, which is your show, you know I think that there is more talk than there is action on several issues, specifically, I think, or particularly with respect to mental health. I think we talk about it way too much. Where are we going to go with it? That's the real question. We're going to go to line number one. We're speaking with Don. Hi, Don.
Hello, Jonathan.
How you doing, buddy?
Not bad, buddy. Good. I just wanted to make your listeners aware of some of the pitfalls when it comes to mental health, especially when it comes to disabled children or youth with disabilities.
Uh-huh.
I had an occurrence where my child was seeing a psychiatrist, and I like to do due diligence when it comes to medications and treatment regimes, and as a parent should, I assumed anyway. And when I started asking questions and not getting the required answers that I figured I should be getting, I ran into a situation where I'm going through a divorce presently, so...
Sorry to hear that, man.
I don't know, hey, the glass is always half full. But, I mean, basically what happened in my situation was when I asked questions and expressed some concerns about the large amount of medication that my son was taking, I was, next thing I know, he was removed from my care, and I was accused of interfering with his treatment. Now, if asking questions is interfering with his treatment, I was guilty. But I could never understand as to... It's written in the Constitution, you have a right to parent your child without undue interference from the state. And if you don't ask questions, well, you're not doing your homework. You're not as a parent. And apparently, when you do ask questions, the court has the right. I was under the assumption this could never be, could never happen, but apparently the court has the right to force you and your son to seek treatment, whether you want it or not.
Could you provide more context, because I'm having a hard time understanding what you're talking about?
I'm still having a hard time. I made an appearance in court after my son was removed, and that was the reason that I was given for his removal, and my wife was granted sole custody. I'm no longer allowed to ask any questions to do with his medical treatment or anything, because I was interfering with this psychiatrist and asking too many questions.
So, in your assessment, you were not doing any of these things, and this is your child?
Yes, I was asking questions, and I would assume that that was the correct thing to do as a parent.
I would think so. I don't know. I don't have kids,
Sounds logical, doesn't it? I mean...
Sounds logical to me, sir, yes.
But apparently, you're not allowed to do that here. And I had a court appearance there yesterday, actually, and I had four witnesses subpoenaed. One of them was this doctor. And I had evidence to be presented that I did nothing to interfere with this young man's treatment, nor would I. The judge not only gave this doctor a pass, told him he didn't have to appear, he didn't have to answer to the subpoena, he refused to call the other three witnesses, and refused to enter my affidavit evidence that I had there as well. My ruling stands. I mean, I can't believe we're living in a province that... something like this can actually happen. And I just wanted to make people aware that if your child is seeing anyone in the psychiatric community, this can possibly happen to you.
Do you have custody of your child?
Presently, my wife was granted sole custody because of me apparently interfering with his treatment by asking questions.
So, with respect, sir, does your wife share the same opinion that you have?
No, that was...
Okay, so is this... With respect, is this an issue of the system, or is this an issue of a dispute between two parents, a child, and the system?
It's not a matter with child services or anything of that nature, but it's a you know, it's a private matter. I guess we're going through a divorce. Okay. We had a difference of opinion, and she chose the doctor's opinion over my opinion, which is fine. Hey, I mean, that's fine.
So it's more than challenging the state, I guess, is what I'm getting into here. It's you're railing against the state in your initial statements, but it seems to be deeper than that.
Oh, it's a private matter between my wife and I, too, with differing opinions.
Right.
Oh, God, yes. But okay. I was always under the assumption that the state could not force you or your child to seek medical treatment against their will. And basically, you can.
How old's your child?
Yeah, he'll be 16 now, shortly.
Well, then your child doesn't have much of a say in this until the child is 18,
known.
Right?
Yeah.
So it, against your will is meaningless when you look at the fact that until a human being is 18, they're not recognized as an adult. And
yes,
therefore, it is under the auspices of the parents, or in this case, one versus the other. And that's a whole other can of worms, which is what we're discussing right now, as to the well-being and the health care of that little human being.
Yeah, I mean, as me as a parent, I like to ask questions and make sure that what I'm doing is in the best interest of the child. I mean,
sure.
If you're not doing your homework. But she's of the opinion that if he says take 20 pills a day, he must know what he's doing. Maybe he does. Yeah, God love him. Maybe he does. And I'm sure he has ample education. And I'm just a humble man with a bachelor of reality, but I'd like to make sure that my son is going to take medications and have side effects down the road, which he has some now, that I'm informed so I can look at him later and know that I've done the best I can for him.
That's, yeah,
you know,
I'm with you, sir. I think that you do have to be privy to all aspects of the health care and treatment and administration for your child. That's part of your role and responsibilities as a parent.
Yes, it's your duty, isn't it?
Have my 100% vote of approval on that. The challenge of unfortunate splits within families and custody and administration of healthcare duties to the child, that's something I'm completely ignorant of, having neither been married nor reproduced. but I know many people who are within the same situation that you are, and I can feel your administrative pain. I know of what you speak, sir, and it is a real challenge, but it isn't the state that is at fault here. It's the system itself and the favoring, some people would say, of one parent versus another. And what you're saying today is something that I've heard countless times, and I don't know if there will be a resolution at the end, but I wish you luck.
Thank you very much, sir.
Don, thank you for bringing this to our attention, and keep us posted if you have any other issue that you would like to discuss or bring forth about this, and I hope that your son gets the treatment that he needs.
Oh, no problem. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Don.
Have a good night.
Good night. It's hard, man. You know it as well as I do. We all have folks like that, perhaps not all, but most of us do in our lives. And is it the system or something else that we have to focus upon in order to improve this type of reality? And this is where we are. I don't know. You want to talk about it? I do. Give us a shout. Nightline at VOCM.com is the email. At VOCM Nightline is Twitter. Pick up the phone. Producer Dave Williams. He is the wall protecting us from the walkers. Right now, we need no protection from Mr. Gordon Skiffington, who is the territory manager with Canadian Blood Services. Gordon, how are you tonight?
Good evening, Jonathan. I'm doing well, and you?
I'm well. Thank you very much. We got a couple minutes here. I heard that you had a blood drive today. Tell us the results.
Yes, today was the annual VOCM summer blood drive, and it was busy. We more than doubled the number of donors that we would normally see on a Tuesday at the blood center today. We had approximately 70 people come to the clinic, which was amazing.
That's fantastic. Where was the clinic?
So the clinic was actually held in St. John's on Wicklow Street at our Wicklow Street Blood Center.
Okay. So 70 people.
70 people. But the need is still critical. You know, we want to thank VOCM and all the donors who came out today. But we just want to let people know that the need is still critical, and we still need 60,000 blood donors to attend community blood drives, blood centers between now and July the 1st. And here in St. John's, this week we're open on Wednesday, tomorrow, from 3 to 7 p.m. again. And on Thursday, we're open from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And then on Friday and Saturday, we're open from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. So there's lots of opportunity for people to get out and help save a life. As well, tomorrow we're going to be, if you're in the St. John's area, we're doing a mobile blood drive at the 351 building on Water Street. It's the building where Husky Energy is located, right next to Starbucks.
Okay. Well, that's fantastic. I hope that you get lots of traction for the pints that you need.
Thank you so much. Like I said, I just wanted to thank everybody, and hopefully within the coming days, we see lots of more donors come through our doors.
Cheers. Thank you, Gordon, and congratulations. We'll speak soon.
Thanks so much, Jonathan, once again, for all your help.
Good night, sir. My help is really crappy because I don't donate any blood, and I should really get off my arse and do so. I'm embarrassed, and every time I confess that, I feel even more of a heel. So perhaps this will be the time to get me to open up my veins. Thank you, Gordon, for the inspiration. Cheers.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. Yep, that's one thing. Talk is cheap. We're going to go to the news, but first, large moose 3 kilometers west of Gambo eastbound lane. Arrive alive. VOCM cares.
Call now, 273-5211, or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the show. We're going to go to line number one. We're speaking with my buddy, Virish Gadag. How are you, sir?
Oh, good. Thank you, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm all right. I could use a little snack. I think I could use a nice vegetarian charcoal grilled salad. That's kind of what I felt like today with all that beautiful sunshine and wind. But instead, and you'll be happy to know, I spent 45 minutes out in the sun doing some stretches and pretending I knew how to do yoga.
Wow, that's great. And on the eve of the yoga day, you did a great thing.
Thank you. Tomorrow's yoga day, though, right?
Yeah, tomorrow is the yoga day.
Tell us all about what happens tomorrow.
Okay, I just want to remind the listeners that there's going to be a worldwide event happening tomorrow. June 3rd, 21st, the summer solstice day, is declared by United Nations General Assembly as the International Yoga Day. Just 2 years ago in 2015. And there's going to be yoga in several countries all over the world. And yoga, in fact, several people attach the meaning to yoga as the physical yoga. But physical yoga is only one aspect of the 8 limbs of yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And physical yoga is the third part of it, whereas the meditation is the 7th part, just before the union with the divine. So what is happening tomorrow is a worldwide online meditation being led by His Holiness Sri Shivakripanand Swami from India. He is the founder of the Samarpan meditation, a simple technique. The intent here is to draw attention of the public to the knowledge of the meditation. Meditation is, in fact, is a part of many different faiths, Jonathan, as you know. Which method of meditation is being practiced is not important here. What the group wants, or the Samarpan Foundation wants, is that as many people as possible learn about the positive effects of the meditation.
Right.
One of the positive effects is development of inner peace, peace from within. And if we want to achieve the world peace, and a set of people try to do that, that can only be achieved once all of these people who are trying have the inner peace. So the motto is to peace to one's world. So we want as many people to meditate and attain this inner peace, and thereby that will permeate into the atmosphere and develops into a world peace. In fact, it has been shown scientifically that in places where meditation is being done on a large scale in groups, crime rates have gone down and several positive things have happened.
Wow.
So so the intent is to develop that with as many people as possible. The more people practice, the more society benefits. So tomorrow at 12:45, the event starts. People can start registering. The site where one can register for online meditation is www.journeytoinnerpeace.
And the two is the number two, journeynumber2innerpeace.com.
Yeah, journeynumber2innerpeace.com. If you click on that, then it will give you, it will guide you how to register. If you already registered, it will tell you that you have already registered and please wait for the event. And around 1 o'clock, just after 15 minutes, the German chapter of Samarpan Meditation addresses the entire group and welcomes everyone for online meditation. It is an initiative from German Samarpan Group.
Mm-hmm.
It's online worldwide meditation. And at 1:05, His Holiness Sri Shukrupan Swami will lead a discourse of 10-15 minutes in Hindi, which will be simultaneously translated into English. And after that, he will lead a meditation for about 15-20 minutes.
Okay.
And around 1:05, it will end, and then there will be closing remarks. And 1:10, everything will be finished. All these times are Newfoundland time.
This is very interesting. Journeytoinnerpeace.com. It's very easy to register, and it will be happening. At what point tomorrow on the 21st, Newfoundland time? 5:30? No.
12:45.
12:45 in the afternoon.
Yeah. Afternoon, yeah.
I will be registered, and thank you, Varish, for this. And no doubt you and I will be connected in yet another way.
Yes, and I hope to see several of the Newfoundlanders joining as well.
Thank you very much for bringing this to our attention, and I hope to see you soon. Take care, my friend.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Lovely. Just to follow up this conversation with Juilliard on Twitter with respect to, in this person's view, the report on mental health in the province, which was 3 or 4 months old. Conversation about mental health is a great start, but it's time for action and change. Yes, of course, I agree. And politicians talk too much, you know that. This person says it's an invitation to do changes to do. I'm guessing a period goes there. Changes are happening, but unfortunately the good news stories are baby steps and do not get media coverage. I asked for clarification. I don't know what the hell that means. This person says small changes are happening in mental health, but the media tends to overlook small good news. Sorry, says this person, but if it cannot be hyped and sensationalized, nobody cares. I take offense to this. I don't speak for all media. I can only speak for myself. Small stories, big stories, good news, bad news, hyped or sensationalized, give me a break. Word of mouth is the best way to transmit news, your neighbors, your good deeds. Just because certain actions are not reported on the 24-hour cable network or radio news networks does not mean that they are not absorbed, digested, and appreciated or hated by other people. You cannot say that information is or is not cared about if it does not make it to the airwaves. I wholeheartedly disagree. I am in the information business, but I just can't agree. There are so many things that happen behind the scenes. There are so many individuals out there who donate, for example, anonymously to charities that want no recognition whatsoever. People care. You don't have to talk about it in order for the message to get out there. So it's an interesting topic. If anybody disagrees with me and agrees with Juilliard, I'm all about it. Give us a call here on our VOCM Nightline airwaves. This is the Marketplace of Ideas. Let's make some change. Pardon the pun. We're going to go and speak with His Worship, Mayor of Torbay, Ralph Tapper. How are you tonight, Mayor Tapper?
I'm doing well, Jonathan. Yourself?
I'm very well. Thank you very much. I was very confused last night. I got a call at the end of the show from a lawyer, Michael Duffy, who I believe lives on the Balleen Line.
That's right.
I said Balleen. He corrected me. It's Balleen Line. And he had a number of things to discuss with respect to quarries. Can you fill us in as to this quarry proposal, which is before the council, that seems to be a similar proposal as to one that was struck down approximately 10 years ago?
Well, we had our regular public meeting last night, Jonathan. We had a full house because our Planning and Development Committee brought forward a recommendation on an application for a permit to put in, another quarry in the same area, as there are three other quarries off the Balleen Line.
Uh-huh.
And that's the Balleen Line within our boundaries of Torbay, obviously, right? So anyway, we had a full house, like I mentioned, and it was a good discussion. Now, with you know, this application came to council a couple of years ago, and it is by the same came from the same person who other councils dealt with years ago. So there's a story behind that, which I'm not going to go into. And I told people last night that, you know, we're dealing, this council is dealing with the application before us, so we're going to try to handle this in a different manner. Yes, the application came a few years ago, but right in the, and again, the applicant had to go and get rights to the land and everything through government process. It was Crown land, so it took some while. But in the middle of that, in February of 2016, and I got to explain as well, in the area, there are three pits. One that is owned by the owned by the town of Torbay, mm-hmm. which has been in operation for years, and these pits go back for 40 or more years. There's another one there that is owned by the Department of Transportation Works, and that's been inactive off and on again for years. There is a third that a local resident has. He's operating from that pit now for several years. Small-time business, small-time operation, and we had no complaints about that operation at all. But in February of last year,
so just to clarify before we go on, not all quarries are the same size. Not all quarries are active. There are three quarries. It doesn't necessarily mean they are three giant quarries.
That's
one
right.
is small. One is inactive. One is in between.
Yeah, I really call this whole area one quarry, because they're side by side, three pits within that area, right?
Apparently, according to Mr. Duffy, you call it a quarry area.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, again, last year, unknown to council, the provincial government, the Department of Transportation Works, issued a subordinate permit to a fairly large operator for the use of their pit for 1 year. That operator came in and during February they put off a humongous blast in that area, and it more or less what I call wake up the neighborhood, mm-hmm. because nobody expected it, it really caught us by surprise. So that started the issues and they were valid concerns by the neighbor residents about the size of the blast, what impact it had on their homes. And then months after, as the aggregate was produced, there were truckloads and truckloads of material hauled out of there into St. John's for projects within the city's boundaries.
How far are these residential areas in terms of distance to the quarries?
It's a fairly, you know, again, it's the development is continuing in there on the Balleen Line. It's still most of the property is residential on the opposite side, especially of the Balleen Line from that particular area. You know, it's
okay.
it's it's not close. I'm not sure the number of meters, but
okay. Is it less than 100? Is it less than 50? Is it across the street, Mayor Tapper? Is it?
No, it's in the backyard of some people. Not the backyard now, but you know, they can see the because it's up on a ridge, and they could see the site from their, you know, their residence.
Does it take more than 3 minutes to walk to the quarry from someone's backyard, or does it take a half an hour?
I'd say it takes probably 15 or 20 minutes.
15 or 20 minutes. Did people purchase these houses before the quarry was built, or was the quarry built before people purchased houses?
The quarry has been there, like I mentioned, for 40 years, so a lot of these residents came in after.
So people purchased a property close to the quarry. This new quarry, which is being proposed and which was shut down by the Supreme Court and now is before, again, application before the council, the Torbay Council. Yeah. How close is that to residential areas?
Well, you know, like I say, it's within sight of some homes, and there's continued development there. So, you know, the owners, if they weren't aware of the quarry within sight of their homes or within in the sight of their property when they built, you know, that was an issue with them at the time, right? So,
did they purchase this property with the guarantee from the town of Torbay that there would be no industrial or continued industrial development in the region?
There's no guarantee, no.
Okay.
This is mostly private property that people either own themselves or developer come along and purchase, develop, and sell. So, you know, it's zoned residential.
And the region where the quarry is located is zoned industrial, yes?
It's rural with discretion of council when it comes to quarries, and that's what you know. That when that again, it goes back 40 years when the council of the day approved that as a quarry area was their discretion, I guess, for that zoning.
Interesting. Thank you for this information, Your Worship. There is more to discuss, but unfortunately, we are out of time. I will be seeking further guidance on this particular issue. Perhaps I'll reach out to you this week. Thank you again, sir. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, if I could, it's going to take some time before this the applicant now he got his permit, but it's going to take him some time to get this operation up and running. So we've got a document already started. And we talked about that last night of working conditions for quarries. So we're going to keep that going as kind of a living document, and we've got some people that we're going to take some advice from and hopefully look after every concern that residents brought to our attention over this course of the application.
Okay. Thank you for this, Your Worship. We'll speak soon. I'm grateful that you called tonight, and we'll speak soon.
Thank you, John.
Good night to you.
Okay,
bye-bye. All right, Mayor Ralph Tapper of Torbay, with respect to the quarry development. And if anybody has any further information or input on this, feel free to send it along. We're going to go to the break. Afterwards, we're speaking with the deputy mayor for the city of St. John's. My goodness, it's Municipal Tuesdays. Deputy Mayor Ron Ellsworth, right after this.
Call now, 273-5211, or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the show. We're going to line number one. We're speaking with my friend and yours, the deputy mayor of the city of St. John's, Ron Ellsworth. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm good. I don't know if I just added 100,000 friends to your network, but there you go. That's it.
I also, if it is, thank you very much for doing that.
Well, you can pay me in smiles and good vibes for the city of St. John's. There you go. That's all the remuneration that I require. I don't want any cats. I know that's what we're going to talk about, but you can keep them all, buddy.
Why?
I am allergic, and I hate them.
Oh. The allergic one, very good.
Yeah, they poop in your house, Ron. They poop in your house, and then they walk all over your furniture with their paws, which are full of poop. That's my opinion on cats.
This was okay. So I'll put you down as a possible.
Yeah, put me down as a maybe.
No, and you're Jonathan, you guys have been very good to us over the last year or two. From time to time, we do run programs to try and encourage cat adoptions at humane services. And as you've identified, we have one going on this week. The regular adoption fee for our cats is $120. This week it's down to $20 for the adoption fees. Mm-hmm. And you know, that would include full medical, first vaccination, you know, dewormed, flea treatment, pig pit insurance, microchip. It also includes a 25% discount on your first examination for a veterinarian. So, yeah, it's a good opportunity for anybody there that's looking for a family pet. Not you, of course. But, you know, anybody that's looking for a family pet, you know, a lot of us are animal lovers and certainly want to encourage members of the community. If they want to have a look at what's available, Jonathan, they can certainly do it online.
Right.
At a good city website. And there's a quick links there for adoptable pets. And you can also check out, you know, any dogs you're looking for, but we usually don't have any issue with adopting out any dogs. Usually cats that are higher numbers, and every time we get to peak capacity, we try to move them out to make room for any other ones that we need to shelter for a period of time.
Deputy Mayor Ellsworth, are we seeing any traction or any positive results in promoting the idea of spaying or neutering your cats from on a yearly basis?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's, you know, we've always talked about responsible pet ownership. And the reality is, if we had, you know, if all pet owners were responsible, we wouldn't have the issues we have today. Mm-hmm. There's lots of great organizations out there who, along with St. John's, continually promote, you know, spay and neutering programs and offer those at discounts at times to try and encourage that to happen. And as part of our process, obviously, there's a screening process that we do to make sure that the cat or the animal, you know, lines up nicely with the home and with the potential adoptive family. But, you know, I think it is. I think, and these programs we're running, I think, creates more awareness and makes people more aware that, you know, these are beautiful animals that we need to look after. And, you know, being an animal lover myself, I'm very passionate about making sure that we secure a safe home for them. So mm-hmm. It's an opportunity for the citizens to do so.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate all those who adopt these animals, because I'm sure they're very nice. I just don't want to see them, except when it comes to keeping the rats out of or the mice out of our neighborhood. That's great, and thank you for all you outdoor cats. But, yeah, that's as far as I want to go on that. But, listen, it's great to see the adoption rates and the fees are halved, and it's very important, folks, to make sure that you spay and neuter any animal that you have. Well, maybe not iguanas, because I don't think they have a reproduction rate the same as dogs or cats. I could be wrong, but it's important. And Deputy Mayor Ellsworth, I don't know if you've seen this recently, but I'm down at the farmer's market, as you know, every Saturday, and there are lots of people that are now bringing their cats on leashes.
Yeah, they're starting to become more and more acceptable in the community public for people to bring their pets with them out and about, and we encourage that, and we encourage that in our parks. You know, but you identified the key there was, you know, pets on leashes, and not only cats, but your dogs. And, you know, if you happen to be out and around in our parks or out and around on trails or whatever, please have your animal on a leash. And we get a fair number of complaints too, Jonathan, about people not cleaning up after dogs in particular. I know Airport Heights area, the trails up there, we get inundated with complaints from that area with people not cleaning up after animals. So, you know, once again, it's all about responsible pet ownership.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's not just animal feces that we have to pick up. It's our sandwich wrappers and everything else, as I said off the top. You know, it's pretty depressing to see how much stuff people just casually throw around. And, you know, just because you don't have a bag doesn't mean that you should leave what your dog dumps behind. Go get a bag and come back. I've done that on more than one occasion, and most dog owners have done that. If you don't have a bag, just mark the spot and come back and pick it up. There you go.
Well, most of us who walk our dogs, you know, if you look at our leash, there's always two or three bags wrapped around the leash somewhere that you can use, or we bring them for, you know, anybody else that may need one when you're out and about, because, you know, it is important to clean up and to keep it clean for everybody in the community, especially with, you know, so many young people running around. And one of the challenges we run into this time of year is people running their pets on our fields, mm-hmm. be it our baseball fields, soccer fields. And,
just,
you know,
gross.
Innocent enough, but the reality is, if any feces that get there, even if you clean it up, there's still feces left on the ground that, you know, our young participants playing sports end up sliding in or being in. And none of us want that for our young participants, for sure.
No, when we were kids, we used to eat dirt, but we certainly didn't eat dog feces. And, you know, it's gross. So that's because there's just more dogs these days, and therefore the the situation is there. You're absolutely right to bring that to our attention, no matter how gross it is. We need to consider that. Speaking of dogs, I'd like to just get a health update from you. Are you walking your dog, or is your dog walking you? How's your knee?
Neither yet. We came off the crutches a couple of weeks ago, so now we're just trying to do strength training for the knee. The brace is still on, but hopefully in a few weeks we'll hopefully get rid of the brace and get back to some normal activity during summer. But, you know, it's going to be, you know, another 3 to 6 months before we get full strength back in the leg. But I'm mobile. Got my, you know, I can drive. So that's all. It's good. So you can do whatever you need to do.
Good. Glad for the update, sure. And glad that you're on the road to recovery. Thanks for your time tonight, Deputy Mayor Ellsworth. We'll talk soon. And go tell your kitty cat not to come near my my zone, my safe space.
Your safe space. It's your safe space you can have.
Okay.
John, once again, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care.
All right, my friend.
Bye-bye. Bye. I'm just kidding. You can bring your cats near my safe space, but I will give them a can't stand little things. We're going to line number two. We're speaking with Eugene. How you doing, sir?
How you doing?
Good. Do you have any cats?
Yeah, I do. I got two of them.
Oh. Well, I'm not coming to your house.
No, I got two of them, my friend. They don't go outside, so that's the main thing.
Right on.
Well, I can't afford to get them fixed.
Oh. All right.
Can't afford none of the money I make right now.
What's on the go?
I work in Bonavista in a crab plant.
Okay.
I get two nights a week, sometimes one night a week.
What?
I'm getting no unemployment. I'm a little ticked off here. Where in the hell where do you say the fisherman is starving to death?
So, Eugene, you're not getting any work because the fishers aren't out there harvesting any biomass.
No,
if you're in the Bonavista region,
ice.
Is that because of the ice? Yeah.
But where does it say that the fishermen are starving to death?
Where does it say that?
Well, the fishermen got $5 million being compensated for it.
Where's your compensation is what I want to know.
But where are we getting it from?
That's a damn good question.
We're not getting nothing. The plant workers, we're the ones that's starving to death. We got no unemployment.
No.
My unemployment ran out there a short while ago.
Mm-hmm.
I got rent to pay. I got hydro to pay. Two nights a week, this is not cutting it.
What kind of wage do you make at the crab plant?
1573, something like that.
1573 before taxes.
Yeah.
So essentially 11 or 12 an hour.
Yeah.
Two nights a week.
I get two nights a week.
$160 a week.
Yeah. I got 9 weeks in. I got 9 weeks in. I got 140 hours.
So.
Whippy. Where are we going to get the rest of it?
What do you. So when the crab plant, this is a seasonal work, right? So
yeah.
How do you. Or what do you do during the winter? Do you rely on employment insurance during the winter, sir?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're a seasonal worker, which is typical of most regions in rural Canada, not just here in Newfoundland and Labrador. You're a seasonal worker. You rely on the bounty of the harvest, which is in the ocean. And if you don't have any bounty, you're out of luck.
That's right.
And that's when you call the government or you call your member of the House or member of Parliament and you say, "Where are you going to help me or what?"
No, you know what?
Right.
They're not helping us. They're getting a friggin' paycheck, sitting on their damn asses, right? Second a paycheck, living high and mighty while we are starving.
Do you feel that you're being ignored by your members?
Yes.
What do the other folks in the crab plant say?
The plant workers are being ignored. We're not getting nothing out of this.
Sir, I can't disagree with you. From what I hear, you folks are being left in the cold and I apologize for not asking that question to Keith Sullivan tonight because, of course, let me ask you, are you a union member with the FFAW?
Yes, I am.
And what does your union say to you?
This is the worst part about this. This is the worst part about this. Now, I'm in the union.
Mm-hmm.
I pay union dues every week.
How much?
I think it's. I can't say for sure. I don't know. I'm not sure. We pay you. We take the union dues. Even we work one day, to take union dues out of us.
Fair enough.
One day. Why not help us?
That's a fair question, sir.
Why not help us? Why take union dues out on one day? One day a week. We work one day a week, Monday to Friday. All right? We work, working Monday to Friday, we work one day, mm-hmm. one night. When we get a paycheck on Thursday, union dues taken out.
Eugene, do you have a family?
No, sir, I don't.
How many folks work in the crab fishery in Bonavista?
There's a lot of us.
100, 200?
More than that. I'm about to say it's over 200.
So you all get one day?
Yeah.
How many?
Shift crowd. Yeah. The day shift crowd now. They're getting their portion of it.
Okay, so they get 40 hours, but you don't.
The night crowd.
Oh, yeah.
Is already getting nothing. Like, more or less, now we're getting the overflow.
Oh, I see. Okay. And take me through a day in the crab plant, Eugene, because I'm curious. What? How many crabs do you process, and what do you do exactly?
Well, we carry 4 pound, 10 pound, 30 pound. There's a lot of crab goes through that plant.
Yep.
A lot of it.
So do you process in an 8-hour shift, do you process 100 pounds or what?
Day shift usually around 80 to 90. 90,000 pounds a day.
90,000.
Around the same thing, yeah.
90,000 pounds a day.
Yeah.
At $6 a pound?
Yep.
Whew. So what you do is essentially you take the legs from the body and you process it that way, or do you do something else?
Yeah, take the legs, we clean the body, and clean it. We send it down to the packers, depack it, and then it goes out to the brine tank, then the cooker.
Critical work.
Yeah.
And your product is enjoyed all over the province as well as the country and the world.
Yeah.
And you get one day a week.
We get one day a week. Just so far now, we got 2 days. Two days this week.
Is the ice breaking up at all?
Yeah, finally gone out.
Of course, the season's almost over.
Yeah.
Do you do any work besides crab? I mean, now that the fishery is open, are you working in the plant for anything else?
No.
Okay. So your entire...
I hate to say this, but I got back problems.
Oh, I hear you. So you can only work a certain amount of time during the year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. How'd you get your back problems? Were you a harvester?
I took my brain. I fell on flight of stairs.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm not even supposed to be working, but I can't sit at home and do nothing.
No, sir, you can't. I respect that, and I respect a hard day's work. Of labor as well. Eugene.
I go to work there in the mountain, I stand that concrete floor out 8 hours a day, 9 hours a day, and I'm hurting.
Do you have any pads that you stand on or?
The plastic ones there. Okay, the rubber ones stand there.
Do they help at all?
No.
Do you wear a mask for that crab asthma stuff or what?
No, I'm on the dumper. I was butchering, but I had to quit it.
Okay.
I had to quit. My hands are swollen too. Sight just swollen too much, and the crab asthma, that's bad.
I hear you.
Yeah, that's crab asthma is bad.
Eugene, listen, I'm going to try and find out I apologize for not asking President Sullivan about this, but
the government's not doing nothing for us.
I'm making this a priority question for tomorrow night's show. Okay.
All right, buddy.
Thank you, Eugene, and I really appreciate the call. I'm glad that you called, because there are a lot of other crab plant workers who are thanking you right now.
Yeah, I wish other people would call in, too.
Me too, sir.
Yeah. And I told the boys that I would call in. And apparently, I guess they ain't going to hear me, so.
Last question I got for you, buddy. Do you eat crab, or can you stand the sight of it?
I love crab, but I can't eat it.
Okay.
I can't eat it. I had a heart attack there 2 years ago, and now I eat crab. Now it races my heart too fast.
Too rich for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you. Yeah. All right, Eugene, my friend. I'll hopefully have some answers for you for tomorrow night's show. Thank you, sir.
Okay, buddy.
I appreciate the call.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There are so many out there, just like Eugene. And where the hell is their compensation? Pardon my language. We're going to go to the break afterwards. Some guy named George Murphy is in the queue. Stay with you.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the show, and thank you to John Shepherd for sending me the judgment to which I was speaking with President Keith Sullivan of the FFAW. Moores versus Fish Food and Allied Workers Union, 2017 NCLA 38. And this is between the Fish Food and Allied Workers Union, who is the appellant, and Edmund Moores in his personal capacity and as a representative of a certain fishing area 14 scallop license holders in the province of Newfoundland and Labrador, and having been represented by their agent, the FFAW. Judges were White, Harrington, and Hullig, and if you're looking for the code for this, it's 201-401-G, as in googly, 2164. Thank you very much, and of course that is the Supreme Court in Newfoundland Labrador Court of Appeal. Thanks, John, for sending that to me. I'm going to read that tonight. It's only 14 pages. Bye. Line number one, George Murphy. What are you at?
What are you at?
That's it. Can't get any tizzer.
No, there you go. How's things, Ari?
Yeah, things are okay. It was a good day. It was sunny. It was windy. Got stuff done. How about you?
Got an awful lot done.
Good.
Including the latest numbers and everything. So they're out here now in internet land, I guess you could say,
mm-hmm.
and posted to the blog, up on the Facebook page, out on Twitter, and in your newsroom.
Oh, excellent.
So there you go. Yeah, news releases and everything all done, and the numbers, of course, on a consumer perspective, are certainly good, you know. But, got an awful lot done today, including that, and a little bit more research, that sort of thing. So, yeah, we're still at it. Still flat out.
Wonderful. Well, tell us what the numbers are, because I haven't seen them.
Yeah, and, like I said, again, down this week, we've had oil down marginally, I guess, over the last two or three days, down about $2 or $3 a barrel again. And I guess some people are going to start asking some questions around that. But the heating oil and stove oil numbers on the refined end of things, those numbers are down only by about a penny. Diesel fuel shows a drop of 1.3 cents a liter, and gasoline is the bigger one again this week, down by 3 cents a liter. That's what the numbers are telling me. So, and Thursday, I guess everybody gets another price break from the regulated maximum price. And, of course, that's not to stop anybody from selling a little bit lower if they wanted to, such as they do in the St. John's Northeast. But prices are starting to get down to that dollar a liter in around town, paid $1.64 today. So it's not too bad on that end of it. And, of course, knowing that our provincial taxes still have that extra 8.5 cents plus HST and everything on top of that, about 9.8 cents. That's keeping us above a dollar. We'd be below a dollar right now if it wasn't for that. So all that, be that as it may, still good news for consumers again on Thursday. And a couple of different factors around that, of course, where we're still getting signs that demand in the U.S. has stayed weak. It's not as robust as what everybody thought it would be, considering that we're into the U.S. summer driving season now. Another build in gasoline inventories out of the Energy Information Administration, out of their inventory reports last week versus the week before, down by about half from what it was, but still, needless to say, the numbers are still up, about 2.1 million barrels over and above where it should be, and where people, I think, probably projected it would be. Refiner capacity is still up, so we haven't seen any sign of refiners actually backing away from it. And here's the catch-22 of it. If they do refine, it means that they take some more crude out of the U.S. market, of course. That might help elevate the price of oil a little bit, but when they refine more, they also produce more refined products, such as gasoline and other distillates. And whenever you have an overabundance of supply, it tends to drive the price down. So they're damned if they do and damned if they don't in this particular case. And, of course, based on what's happening in the world situation, the last thing they want to do is actually add to the problem of the world glut of oil that's out there. And it is out there, and probably out there a little bit a little bit more prominent now than what it was this time last week, because we've got Libya entering back into the market. They've come back in, well, a lot sooner than what everybody expected, I think, with the latest production figures. Month previous, they were doing about 300,000 barrels in the run of a day. And keep in mind that they're also an OPEC member here when I say this, but they're also they were exempt from the OPEC production cuts that were instituted again in March, or I should say extended in March. And today's figures that were released today by OPEC show that Libya has boosted up production by another 600,000 barrels in the run of a day for the month of June so far.
Good for them.
Yeah, they're up to about 900,000 barrels in the run of a day. Now, they're still about 600,000 a day short of where they were pre-Gaddafi, put it that way, before he was unseated and overthrown. But still, it's a sign that Libyan production, of course, more oil into the Brent markets particularly, and that's been helping to drive down the price of oil a little bit too in the markets today. So the overall outlook right now, we've still got downwards pressure on gasoline, albeit I think that in the next week or two, we're going to start to see signs of it tapering out a little bit, if you will. The drops in gasoline prices, I don't think, are going to be quite as prominent as they have been the past couple of weeks for some of the obvious reasons,
right?
Namely U.S. shale. With oil dropping, of course, we're soon going to start to find out if U.S. shale producers are going to be able to produce at $40 a barrel. And so I'm looking at this as a bit of a test, really, of what's going to be happening in the U.S. markets and how they're going to be able to produce in the next little while, too, if the price goes any lower. So it's kind of measured this week, albeit it is down by about 3 cents a liter, but it may not be so next week. So I think we're starting to get towards the bottom of that trough right now when it comes to the low end of gasoline prices. So, you know, we're taking a wait-and-see approach, basically, on what's going to be happening for the rest of the summer here. But I don't expect it to be skyrocketing overnight either. Mm-hmm. If you witnessed today, I guess, with the tropical cyclone, Cindy, I think it was, that entered the Gulf of Mexico and right now is pummeling the coast of Louisiana and Alabama, where some of the major production facilities are, and everything with oil in the Gulf, didn't affect the markets at all. And, you know, so that's how insignificant this storm, I guess, in one case really was. Mm. And hopefully there's no loss of life or anything, but we're even watching things like that happening. So the markets are in a bit of a turmoil out there. And I really don't know exactly what's going to be able to take them out of it right now, you know, when it comes to that low price.
Well, we will see what we can see in the days to come. But it's good to have some speculation along the way, because even though we are powerless to influence this type of market, it's very interesting to be informed about it. Thank you very much, George. We're going to fit in one more call before the end of the show. Go enjoy that beautiful, windy, muggy evening.
Yeah, there you go. And have a good night to everybody, and good night to yourself and to Mr. Williams.
Thanks, brother. Good night.
Bye-bye. Take it easy. Yeah.
All right. Hey, what happened to our last call? Gone. Oh, man. I could have talked to George Murphy for like another 60 seconds. Well, looks like I'm just going to have to recite some Beowulf. In all seriousness, thank you very much for all of your contributions tonight on the show. And let's finish with this. Somebody named Realist on Twitter says, with respect to my call with Eugene, the one who was a plant worker in Bonavista for the crabs, says, maybe people will clue into declining industries, unsustainable employment in small communities someday. Maybe. I asked for solutions and Realist reported back, move. Re-educate. It's similar, to me whining about my Blockbuster Video closing down and wanting the government to step in. And there's a emoji of a yellow face rolling its eyes. So move and re-educate, Eugene. That's what the Realist says. What does re-educate mean is what I asked, and what does move cost? Realist says, I'd love to live at home, but I dare not move home. Work a dying industry in Newfoundland and Labrador, then complain about income. So once again, this is someone who is apparently providing input and commentary from away. And that's fine, because that's our God-given right as Canadians. to move because we are a mobile labor force. It's not as simple as moving and re-educating. We did the re-education in 92. We've done it since then. We ended up with a bunch of hairdressers, a bunch of barbers, and a bunch of computer repair persons. And that was great for a short period of time, but not everybody needs a haircut every day, and not everyone needs their computer repaired. It's one thing if you're working 40 years in an industry to quote-unquote be re-educated. It's another thing if you're in there for 4 years. Yes, you can change your career, you can change your vocation, you can change your job. I don't think that's as easy as that for Eugene and many other people. It certainly isn't. So, what do we do about it? It's not as simple as re-educating. It's certainly not as simple as moving. It's very challenging to move when we have a referendum cap, I think, of 90% approval for small towns to leave where the government will pay you. That's something we need to look at, and thank you for bringing this issue up. I appreciate that, realist, and perhaps we'll continue this conversation tomorrow. But as of now, we're done. So you can listen to the rebroadcast of this morning's VOCM Open Line with host Patty Daly right after this. Of course, you can catch him live tomorrow morning, 8:30 Labrador time, 9 a.m. Newfoundland Standard. We will rejoin you tomorrow night. On behalf of myself and producer David Williams, as we say in Hebrew, good night, Laila Tov.